This is the Toronto Today podcast. I'm your host, Greg Brady.
Universities. I want to play you a video I was meaning to get to earlier, and you jam up a bunch of stuff. This is a graduate student, or a senior rather, an undergrad at the University of Southern California, known for their football. I think you and I would agree, Mike.
For sure.
But they've canceled grad because they're worried about disturbances, and we've seen all the video about disturbances on campus. And I want to talk about sort of that brand that a university is when things like this happen. This video grabbed me. I sent it around to a few friends. They said it grabbed them exactly the same way. Here's her making a video documenting how there's no graduation ceremony for her after 4 years of hard work.
The seniors that are graduating college right now are the seniors that graduated in 2020, where we didn't have a high school graduation. And a lot of us had like drive-through fake graduations or no graduation at all. And now we are seniors about to graduate, getting ready for our first real graduation, and it just got canceled. I literally just can't even, I'm in shock right now. We, as a whole senior class, have never had a real graduation because of COVID first, which we thought was like a one-time thing, like we're the class that got screwed over. It is what it is, unlucky. Now, USC just canceled it. We've all worked so hard to get here. USC, I'm sure you know, is not an easy school to get into. And so everyone that goes here is very accomplished, like had worked really hard to get in, and now they just canceled our freaking graduation. Like, what now? What now? They sent out an email 10 minutes ago about how they know it's disappointing, but they're canceling it, and they're gonna have other fun events, which I don't even know what that means.
Really hits a lot of people. It's a once, like you think 2020, once in a lifetime, what can we do? You can't get those years back. We'll try and make it up to you. And then 4 years later, you're like, okay, smooth sailing, and I can live my life, and I'm at college now, and bang, this.
Yeah, no, it's you feel for them. You know, look, I have a daughter who lost her grade 8 graduation, and if you know, she's going to graduate from grade 12 this year. So
imagine that prom getting scrubbed, right, or the commencement.
Exactly. Yeah. No, it's a challenging time for universities dealing with these protests, and these are places. Academic freedom's important. They believe in the value of free speech. But there's also an implicit contract they have with every one of those students that they'll get an experience, not just in the classroom, but it's the whole experience, which includes living in dorms, growing up, really becoming an adult, and graduating, and, you know, having your parents there to celebrate it. And it breaks my heart a little bit, and I think of all the kids in my life too who were robbed by COVID, and then to have this happen. So I understand the anguish she's feeling.
Do you think there's any brand damage being done to the idea of universities or colleges as a whole? I'd like to think not. I'm a huge believer in them. I wouldn't trade the 4 years I was at Western for anything. I loved every. I'm sure there were hard times. I'm sure I punched a pillow a couple times, but I look back and it's amazing how you can only remember the good things. You don't remember the stress and being broke and breakups and being angry at your roommates and all that stuff. You only remember good things. Is there any bit of damage that you see kind of cracking the foundation of why they matter to us?
Well, I think there is. I think this is a really challenging time. You know, what I would offer is we need time. We are in the middle of it now. This is the fog of, call it the fog of war. So universities are dealing with this really challenging times as a result of the war in Israel. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people very passionate on both sides of this issue, and they are impacting the ability of other students and people just to go about their school life. So. Is it impacting? Absolutely. Look at Harvard. We've seen the president of Harvard got fired. We've seen alumnus who are critical, particularly in the U.S., for providing philanthropy and funding those organizations, calling them on the carpet and saying they are going to second guess whether they continue to provide funding to those organizations. So will Harvard, for the rest of my time on this earth, always be seen as a prestigious university? I think so. Is this still a very difficult time for Harvard and USC and others, Penn State? Absolutely it is. And how they handle a minority of students, and I'm not questioning their ability to raise real concerns, but how they handle that while also the majority of students, I would suggest, ensure that they have a safe and positive time at university is what's going to be looked at and focused, and people will make judgments about the brand as a result.
And there's the sell of just the cost to wrap this up, because we've always looked south of the border and thought, or if we have U.S. Friends, relatives, whatever, and you're like, you guys pay like 36 grand to it. Ours is still nine. Like, it's not nothing to send a kid to university here in Ontario. If anything, it ends up being the rent and the food. And if you your kid needs a car in some of these cities that aren't Toronto to drive to campus. So if you're going to push that much money in all these American schools, I look at, Mike, and I think when parents are asked to be in make – like it's $250,000 to $300,000 investment. So you got to make about $500,000 to afford that investment in after-tax money. Holy cow, you better be getting a great experience.
Right, and I think that's the key word, experience. The education you'd like to think is a given. They're going to go to class. They're going to have good professors. They're going to be challenged to think and learn how to think. But it's all the what's being challenged now is all the experience around the classroom, getting to school, feeling safe, having the right to a graduation, going into your dorm and again, not being accosted by people who are pursuing their own ends. So it's a challenging time for universities. And they, and, you know, by and large, they do a great job, particularly here in Canada, where they do a really great job of providing those experiences for students. But it's a moment.
Yeah, we've got a couple minutes here. I want to ask you about TikTok, and we may be able to carry it through off the break. But the U.S. government's made a huge push, and they've moved really quickly on this. Some people think government moves at a glacial pace. The House of Representatives agreed, bipartisan vote, to either ban TikTok or force a sale of it from the Chinese-owned company that owns it. The Senate said yes this week. Joe Biden's already signed the legislation. Like, they got a lot of balls in the air. We mentioned the Middle East. Yeah. They're able to handle a TikTok bill. What about Canada and whether or not we fall or not? Because we're looking around going, yeah, we're pretty busy here, too. It feels like we got a lot of fires to put out, but doesn't even feel like our governments are talking about this.
No, it's strange. It feels like a blind spot for the Trudeau government, a government that has seemed to be slow off the mark to deal with foreign interference in Canada already. You know, this would be an easy one to say, we're concerned. The U.S. doesn't come to this decision out of nothing. You know, they have real concerns. And imagine the power of TikTok. It seems benign. You're flipping through videos of cats, but cats and bears juggling balls. But it is also the power of the Chinese government to just slowly promote certain videos. You know, we are in a war. You know, the West versus the East is in a war in Ukraine right now. And China is supporting Russia in this war. And the ability to them to just filter in just a few little videos here and there. Do we really need to support Ukraine? You know, is Putin really such a bad guy? You know, that subtle little influence that comes with owning a platform like that should be a concern. And I think, you know, truthfully, our government's been a little slow to address it.
Mike Van Solen's with us. He's a communications and crisis expert. We were talking about that ban to move TikTok in the United States. And it's weird because... yeah, we're not sort of in that moment right now in the U.S. where we can feel whether there's a bit of a I think people are rolling their eyes right now saying, oh, yeah, sure. And next thing you know, try and download it on your phone. It's not there. Go for it on your phone. It's not there. Like there are these restrictions. We've obviously got this with the Facebook Meta news ban at times.
Well, what I find really interesting, of course, Biden signed the legislation to set the wheels in motion for banning TikTok in the U.S., but at the same time, his own campaign is putting videos out on TikTok. So, you know, what's interesting about this is they want to get TikTok out of the hands of the Chinese government, but no one politically wants to say, I actually want to kill TikTok. They just want it to be owned by someone in the U.S. because they want to use it. Like politically, it is one of the most powerful tools.
You're reaching a younger demo. I know. Yeah.
So well, you know, the headlines might suggest they're banning TikTok, but TikTok's not going anywhere. It's still going to be used by young people. No one has to worry about losing that dopamine hit of flipping through those videos. But you're playing to one audience in saying we're going to wrestle this company out of the hands of the Chinese government. But you're also playing to another audience who really wants it, and they want it. They want to keep that association.
Does it switch? Do you think at any point, Mike, it switches to a more, I guess I would call it a conventional audience, to the point, as you're saying, it's kind of silly, it's kind of goofy, but I also think now organizations even like what we do at 640 and news organizations are starting to think about how to reach people and post more content on there. And remember the early days of Twitter, I remember, I think By the time my boss at the time said, you do a show, you got to be on Twitter. By about the third email, I responded. And he's like, I'm not asking you. I'm telling you, I would really just give it a shot. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I see where this would go. I see where this communicates with listeners. I see how this gets the brand out. Does TikTok become more like that? And we've all tried this with Facebook and Insta and a lot of stuff. And yet TikTok's sort of that outlier. Way more hits, but you don't necessarily see it as... how would I put it? Mature content at times.
No, Marshall McLuhan, the medium is the message. So each of these platforms has a different way that they curate content. But I think we're all trying to figure out how do we play in these different mediums. Radio, talk radio still has a wonderful spot with listeners and that relationship it forms. But sure, you could be on TikTok too, and you would engage in a different way. The conversations wouldn't be quite in depth, but you are tapping into a group of people who may not drive, have access to a radio. But the content you're creating, curated across these different platforms, is what everybody's trying to figure out. And certainly marketers are trying to figure out, people who are running businesses are figuring out. And it may seem all light and fluffy, but it's still engagement. You're still having a conversation, but just in a way that we don't think of it traditionally.
Mike Van Solen's with us, a crisis communications expert for, we have a few more minutes with him. It's a tale as old as time itself, or as long as people could fly, frustration with airlines. And again, things can go very viral in the last 15 years, and you've got platforms. Every single person has got a platform to complain about this, complain about that. You found a really interesting story about a wedding party headed to Jamaica, kind of one of these destination weddings, and just the simplest things started to go wrong.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. I just think customer service is so important. And I think it should be, companies should treat customers as well on the first day of that relationship as the last day. If I can call, for example, a telco and sign up for a cell phone with one phone call, I should be able to equally call them with one phone call and get out of that contract when it's the right time. But this is a story of Sunwing, a great company. I think a lot of us have, taken their vacations. They've figured out how to price their packages really effectively and get down there.
Yeah.
But then to hear a story where people clearly had their luggage rifled through, electronics stolen, and it's just, they're so slow to respond. And the challenge companies have is they want to have all the information before they say anything. But what they miss is that Canadians are very patient. They can understand that bad things can happen to a good company. So this looks like, some luggage handler somewhere along the line got into these people's luggage and took electronics. The company just needs to acknowledge, hey, we heard something bad happen. We're going to get the bottom of it. We'll get back to you. We're going to work with you to help and make this good. But they become paralyzed with indecision and lawyers talking in their ears, and they want to have all the information before they say anything because they think they'll be on the hook for some damages that maybe they shouldn't be. But taking care of that customer, once you have a relationship with them and communicating with them, even if you don't have all the information, say, we get it, we hear you, let us try to get to the bottom of it, is what they should do. So look, there may be layers to this story, but interesting once again to see a kind of a big company struggling to just move quickly in the face of a crisis.
Well, it's a 40-person wedding party. The trip goes well, the wedding goes well, but this is all on the way back. And the great question would be, and I think this is where, like you said, you get kind of hung up, almost the bigger corporation, the more hurdles to jump over. The great debate seemed to be, well, should the airline go to the airport, which is in Montego Bay, and say, this isn't us, this clearly happened on your watch. But in doing that, and the back and forth and emails and the grinding of the gears, you're delaying the customer, and the customer is thinking every day, why haven't they called me? Every day, why haven't they? We do this with our insurance companies too. An insurance company that gets to you right away, holy cow. Like that's worth its weight in gold if somebody's going to tell that story about how good an insurance company was responding to a claim. This is the opposite of that.
Exactly. It's, I've worked with a lot of companies who've experienced data breaches. And when a data breach happens, their customers are they have to communicate to the customers. And the IT department doesn't actually know what happened. So I'm always having to coach them to go, we just have to, let's go out, let's talk to the customers, acknowledge that something has happened and that we're working to investigate it. And as soon as we have more information, we will get back to you. And that is just sometimes it's too hard for companies just to make that step. Well, they want to figure it out first. They want to know everything that happened. And in this instance as well, the airline should contact those customers and say, we're going to get to the bottom of this. We don't have all the answers today, but we're going to get them to you. And they would feel so much better. They understand that that something like this can happen and that they may not have all the answers all the day. But what they can't stand is silence.
Last thing, we always debate companies that are, I wouldn't say uncancelable, but hard to cancel. And there's obviously great debate. It's a fun thing to do to go with your friend. Which of these two controversial figures is more likely to get canceled based on what they did or what they didn't do? And Adidas and Kanye West made a deal a few years ago, and it ended quite badly. But it doesn't seem to have hit Adidas terribly hard. And Kanye West could probably announce a show at Scotiabank Arena tomorrow, and it would be sold out within 10 minutes. So both these companies kind of emerged from a bit of an ugly moment.
Right. And it just shows, you know, we talk about living in cancel culture, but it's actually pretty hard to cancel a lot of companies or individuals. And I like to think about, you know, who's the Teflon Don? Nothing sticks to, you know, who certain people. You know, Donald Trump, I think, is the Teflon Don of politics today. Kanye West might be the Teflon Don of the music business. You know, what's interesting and what gets lost in this is Adidas didn't stop selling his shoes. They just stopped producing them. In their latest quarterly results, they said, oh, yeah, you know, we've ended our relationship with Kanye West. But his sneakers, by the way, we sold 150 million euros worth of them, and we made 50 million euros on them.
But they kind of pushed him out of ads, pushed him out of the mainstream. They didn't, like, he wasn't really promoting what their product, right, or the shoes themselves.
Right. But Kanye West, for the vile anti-Semitic language he used, has not been canceled. You're right. He could still fill Scotiabank. He could probably find. Maybe he's not going to get a deal with Adidas, but he'll get branding deals still. He still exists, and maybe I don't listen to his music, but maybe that just speaks to, you know, as troubled a person as he is, what a talent he is in as a rapper.
And musicians are kind of that maverick. I think they can call their own shots more than they used to, because the streaming services want all that catalog of music on. So you're not sort of you still would be with a certain record company, but if a record company drops somebody, they're going to pick you up. Like we just saw Neil Young kind of crawl back to Spotify because he was mad that Joe Rogan's podcast was also on Spotify. I'm like, you're going to find everything on Spotify. Yeah. You'll find people that believe aliens exist on Spotify on a regular basis. So if you pull your music, I think he realized after 2 years, he was kind of only damaging his own self and his own brand for being out there.
No, that's it. I mean, the artists now, you know, while the collapse of you know, records and record stores and the move to streaming seemed like an existential crisis at the time, I think what's emerged is they, as individually as artists and as brands, are more bulletproof than they used to be. They're more independent. They have more accesses. It's diverse, but more access to diverse streams of revenue, and they can call their shots in ways that they couldn't be. You know, we're certainly talking about the top, you know, 1% of artists in the world. I trust it's still a challenge for, you know, people starting out. But you know, Kanye West continues to persevere, and Neil Young, great example.
Mike, great pleasure having you in. Have a good weekend. We'll chat next Friday.
Happy Friday.
Thanks for listening to the Toronto Today podcast. We drop the highlights of The Daily Show every weekday morning at 11 a.m. Don't forget, you can hear the entire show on the radio, at home, on your smart speaker. Ask Alexa or say, hey, Google, play 640 Toronto or Toronto Today. You can hear us on between 5:30 and 9 weekdays on 640 Toronto. Have a great day.
Canada may be known for its landscapes and friendly people, but beneath the surface lies a darker side of crime, history, and the paranormal. Since 2017, the award-winning Dark Poutine podcast has explored the shadowy corners of the Great White North and beyond, delivering chilling tales from a uniquely Canadian perspective. Hosted by Mike Brown and Matthew Stockton, with over 300 episodes and fresh releases every Monday, Dark Poutine is your weekly ticket to the creepier side of Canada. Listen to Dark Poutine on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.